Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 13-521 in the matter of the application of the Columbus Southern Power Company for the authority to establish a standard service offer pursuant to section 4928.143. We have a rather intricate time split this morning. I have a list of the players in the minutes, literally minutes. You're going to be held to your minutes, so please keep that in mind. We will start with Mr. Ware. Pardon me? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Darr. Couldn't read the writing.
Thank you. May it please the court. Because of the decisions issued by the commission in this case, the electric security plan of AEP Ohio taxes customers for above market generation, even if they shop for retail electric service. Any benefit of shopping is blunted or eliminated. And the penalty is severe. The commission has imposed non-bypassable riders that tax customers $508 million in so-called stability charges, and they face a deferred claim for another $445 million estimated, plus interest for wholesale capacity charges. But in this case, the court has an opportunity to rectify or remedy the situation. By issuing an entry in this decision, finding that these charges are unlawful, the commission has already recognized that it will go back and adjust at least the capacity portion on a forward basis based on the outcomes of the pending matters. And it repeated that statement as recently as 4 weeks ago.
How much above market? It's a pretty big number, isn't it?
Yes, there's very substantial, Justice Pfeiffer.
Well, how much was it in terms of units?
There are two components here. $508 million associated with the above market generation retail charges that are collected in the retail stability rider. There is another $445 million sitting in a deferral account, basically a bucket of money that the company has been currently authorized to begin collection of June 1st. But again, the commission has said that it will go back and look at those numbers depending on the results of the open cases, including this one.
I think in the Consumers Council brief, they argue that the commission has essentially authorized a double collection of certain funds.
Yes, and in fact, the commission itself has identified that there's a potential double recovery and is currently conducting an investigation of that in a related case as well. That's one of the many cases that are open, and I'll require the commission, by its own admission, to go back and look at these numbers.
Has this ever been done before?
Has what been done before, Justice, may I ask?
Has the commission ever approved this kind of a collection?
The commission has approved, as parts of settlements, the collections of stability charges, but in a contested case, this is something of a first. What you have here is the commission
calculating. Have they had a deferral account in other cases?
There have been deferral accounts in the ESP1 case, which was before the court under the phase-in rider review about 2 years ago. And as you will recall, the court concluded in that case that the amounts had already been collected and therefore no refund was available, even though there may have been, as I believe one justice provided.
This is a repeat of what had happened the last time when there was no bond set and we permitted AEP to collect, was it $320 million or so?
It is not exactly the same situation, Your Honor. What happened in the prior case is the court found that the amounts that we were seeking to have offset against the deferral balance had already been collected.
Yes.
In this instance, the deferral balance is literally a balance that remains to be collected by AEP.
Okay.
Thus, the commission has said that
you're asking us to tell the commission that they cannot authorize that collection. Is that it?
Essentially, Your Honor, that is correct.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next, we have Ms. Grady.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Under the PUCO orders, Ohioans are paying for a costly, unlawful subsidy in the name of promoting further competition. This issue is a question of law. The subsidy I'm referring to is the capacity subsidy. Capacity is sometimes referred to as iron in the ground. The iron in the ground here was the power plant that is available at a moment's notice. The capacity subsidy is being paid by customers as we stand here today. That payment has not been stayed. The capacity subsidy was created when the PUCO made customers pick up someone else's tab for $600 million worth of capacity. That someone else was the marketers. The PUCO allowed the electric marketers to pay very low prices for capacity. The marketers paid $600 million less than it cost AEP to provide that capacity. But in this rate making, there would be no free lunch. The PUCO allowed AEP to charge other customers for the $600 million they did not collect from the marketers. The PUCO ordered that subsidy collected in the electric security plan through a retail stability rider.
Well, Council, isn't there sort of a, like the pictures of the dominoes knocking each other down? They didn't charge enough to the folks who are going to market this. So if we sent it back and said, well, you did this wrong, wouldn't the end result, maybe not in the short run, but the end result be a greater charge to the marketers and then the retail customers, whether they're industrial or households, are still going to pay the bill?
Well, Your Honor, the you are correct in that it was a domino theory. The marketers did not pay, so the PUCO turned around and charged customers. But that, under the law, is unlawful. Under 4928.02H, the commission is supposed to ensure that there's effective competition by avoiding anti-competitive subsidies. And here it embraced the anti-competitive subsidy.
And they did that why? To keep open some coal-fired plants that ought to be shuttered? Is that what's the bottom line in all of this?
Your Honor, I think that's another issue that will probably be before the court soon. But the reason that the commission did so is they thought that if they shielded the marketers from these charges, it would entice other marketers to come in and offer more rates. But what the PUCO did was intrude upon the market, and under Ohio law, anti-competitive subsidies are unlawful. What the PUCO did is they wanted to choose winners. They wanted to use the subsidy, the $600 million subsidy, and choose winners in the marketplace. And when they allowed the marketers to be subsidized to the tune of $600 million, they created an advantage of the market for the marketers over the standard service offer customers that who would take standard service offer from the EDU.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Urich?
May it please the court. The commission's order adopting AEP's rate design for Rider RSR is unlawful and unreasonable because the rate design violates cost causation principles and creates intra-class subsidies between customers within a particular rate class. According to the record, AEP correctly measured cost to be recovered through Rider RSR using a 5-coincident peak method. The company then correctly allocated costs to the various rate classes by determining the class contribution to peak usage. However, then the company, for reasons that are unclear, determined a per kWh energy charge for each class to collect those capacity costs. No reason was given for the switch from capacity rates to an energy rider, but it is clear from the record that the RSR rider should be designed as a demand charge for demand metered customers. The commission stated on rehearing that designing the RSR as a demand charge would burden smaller customers, which is frankly just flatly not true.
Council, if I may, you use the word intra-class subsidies.
Intra-class
subsidies. I heard that, yeah, intra-class subsidies. What do you want this court to do about intra-class subsidies today?
I want the court to give the commission guidance so that in designing this RSR in further collection, those intra-class subsidies are eliminated.
You want us to give them guidance?
Correct.
Would that require us to find that what they did was illegal?
Yes.
And what happens then?
Then at that point, at least there's precedent that on an ongoing basis, future collections of RSR will not contain these intra-class subsidies.
I'm more concerned with the $600 million that we're complaining about today. What happens if we say that was an intra-class subsidy? You were wrong. What happens?
My argument is on the rate design, which will be revenue neutral to the company. My argument, in other words, assumes that RSR, I assume for the sake of argument that it's legal. I don't concede that it's legal. But for purposes of this rate design argument, there should be no change in revenue to the company. Eliminating these intra-class subsidies only makes these subsidies fair within rate classes, okay? Our argument, in essence, is that these are capacity costs. They were measured according to 5 coincident peak, which is measures capacity, that these costs were then allocated to rate classes based on their contribution to peak, again, capacity, and then it's switched over to an energy charge. For a company like Kroger, who within their rate class has a high load factor, their costs for capacity are determined by their energy usage, which is incorrect. Two customers in the same rate class who are using the same amount of capacity ought to be charged the same amount for that capacity. It shouldn't depend on how much energy they use.
Thank you.
Did I answer a question?
Yes.
The commission stated that customers, smaller customers, would be harmed by our proposed rate design, which is frankly untrue. Again, the load factor will be a determining factor, but the size of the company, if there's a small company with a high load factor, that company should actually pay less for capacity than under the company's proposed faulty rate design.
Have we ever told the commission how to establish its rates?
Certainly the court has the ability to...
We don't generally design the method of promulgating what the rates are.
I'm not aware of a case where the Supreme Court's ever sat back and act as a rate designer.
Right.
But I do believe...
Are you asking us to do that then in this case?
Based on the record, okay?
Pardon me?
Based on the record, I am. But we have expert testimony in the record. Kroger has expert testimony in the record that guides the court on how that's to be done.
So we should choose the testimony from your expert over testimony from others and say yours is the one that we want to be followed.
Correct, because it's
based on what?
Based on cost causation principles and frankly, just reason and common sense.
So we have to say that the commission abused its discretion in designing the rate, and then we have to tell them to use your expert? Is that what you want us to do?
I want you to adopt the rate design that was proposed and supported by the evidence by my expert as well as
other experts. If we agree that the rate design was an abuse of discretion, why wouldn't we just send it back for a new hearing?
That would be within the court's discretion to do also. You could do that. I believe, and it's my argument, that there's sufficient evidence in the record to show that the rate design proposed by Kroger and other expert witnesses is the correct rate design. It's obviously a capacity cost.
Only one correct rate design in your view?
No, but there's only one correct way to get to the rate design of a capacity cost.
Okay. And who says that we should follow the capacity cost as opposed to the retail RSR in this case?
It's my opinion that the clearest explanation of how to do that is within Kroger's witness Kevin Higgins' testimony.
All right, I think Justice.
Counsel, I thought that part of your argument with the appellants was that the commission did not sufficiently explain its reasons for what it did.
That's true. And that is more evidence, in my opinion, in my client's opinion, that the commission didn't do what they were supposed to do. They didn't, not only was it incorrect, but they didn't even provide any kind of reasoned analysis for it. The only statement that they made in the record was that Kroger's rate design would hurt smaller customers, which is categorically untrue.
So if we were to remand, would that resolve the problem that you see on that score?
It could do that if you were to remand and the commission were to come up with a decision that was nonsensical or incorrect or unlawful or unreasonable
or not the way you wanted it to be.
This, Your Honor, with respect, this is not a preference. I think this, if we were here just because we thought we could come up with a cleverer rate design or a more appropriate rate design, we would not be here on appeal. This is so out there. It's so egregious to take capacity costs and recover them through an energy rider, so that two customers in the same rate class could be using the same amount of capacity, and the amount that they pay for that capacity is not dependent on how much demand they're entitled to. It's based on how much energy they use, which is just flatly incorrect. It's rate design 101. It's basic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Ms. Trafford.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may. May it please the court, in proposing and then accepting the modified electric security plan, in this case, the company was responding to the commission's direction and strong encouragement, as well as the desire of the customer advocates, that AEP Ohio make a very quick move to be in a position of offering market-based pricing to its non-shopping default service customers. This, of course, is a major change from what we saw over the last decade, where everyone encouraged AEP Ohio not to go to market because they had below-market prices. They wanted the benefit of those below-market prices. So this is a very transformative ESP we're looking at in this case that has many parts that all relate together. In order to accomplish this major change, the company had to significantly and permanently change its business model. It had to sell off, it agreed to sell its generation assets. It committed to a hard deadline of June 1st of this year to be in a position to offer a fully competitive, market-based generation, energy and capacity for its customers.
But in this, Ms. Trafford, as I recall back at the beginning, it was we're going to separate generation from retail and all of that, and everybody's got to get out of, got to have two separate businesses. But that isn't really what happened, is it? I mean,
it is.
This generation that you still had, isn't that what's behind this charge? Is the cost of keeping that maybe over in a separate company?
No, Your Honor, and I think what you're referring back to, and remember, we have to keep kind of the history and context here. The original SB3 goal was to get everybody to market in a very short period of time, that 5 years. That was a failed mission. As a result of that, we had...
Well, it was already imploding in California when they passed it, right?
And you'll recall what the commission did then was create these rate stabilization plans. Mm-hmm. Then the General Assembly responded and gave the commission the authority in Senate Bill 221 to create these ESP plans and gave the commission considerable discretion to include in these plans terms, conditions, and charges that would have the effect of stabilizing or providing certainty in the retail electric market. And that's really what we're dealing with here. That is what this rider was intended to do.
I think we've, with all the people involved here, I think we've got two different things going that we've heard a little bit of this morning. We probably need a couple of hours for this case, but one is the main objectors are saying, look, we're being charged this $600 million twice, or the $400 million, I'm not clear which, but I'll figure that out eventually. The way they did it, we're getting nicked twice for it. And then you have Croker, who's saying, start out focused on one thing, and then when it got to the end, used the wrong measuring stick. And I think those are two different issues, aren't they?
Those are two different issues. And the significant issue really is the rider itself. And let me explain why it's not a subsidy, why it's not paying twice. The rider, if you look at how the commission structured the rider, it was a cost-based analysis that used traditional rate-making concepts. The commission started with the idea that there had to be a revenue target in order to provide stability for the company during this very transformative period. There was very stark testimony in the hearing that the combined effect of the commission's decision in the capacity case to set the price that AEP would have to charge the competitive providers, the combined effect of that decision with all the benefits being proposed in the ESP would have left AEP Ohio with an unconstitutional confiscatory result of 1.1% return on equity. Nobody would agree that that was an acceptable result. The RSR, in part, was to provide that financial stability that would keep the company able to continue in its role as the default service provider.
Well, but the company's been in here, and I can't keep track of all of them, arguing that 19% is still not excessive. Somewhere in between.
Your Honor, in this case, there was very careful analysis, and I urge you to look at the commission's opinion on page 35, where it lays out the basis for the first component of the rider. Very careful analysis, very conservative cost-based estimate of what it would take to order in order for the company to be able to get through this two-and-a-half-year transformative period. The same on the capacity deferral side. These are actual costs. These aren't numbers that are being made up out of thin air. They are cost-based numbers. And once the commission ordered the company to allow the competitive providers to buy capacity at the market rate, even though everyone would have to agree that the cost was higher, someone has to pay for that cost. And it's fair that all customers pay for that cost. Because well, during this period,
is some of the argument about going back to the generation, an alternative for your company would be to just shutter a couple of those plants that are high cost and go into the marketplace and have long-term contracts to provide the capacity, buying from others.
Your Honor, as of this point in time, as of June 1st of this year, AEP Ohio will be fully in the market, both for energy and capacity. It will be procuring its generation service in the market. I think the issue you're referring to is an issue that's not in this case. It may come before the court next year, but it's not in this case. At this point in time, AEP is going to be buying capacity and energy in the auction markets.
Ms. Trafford, you mentioned the 1.1% return on equity was not conceivable. What did the commission then determine was the target?
In terms of computing or structuring the rider, the commission did several things to make its estimate more conservative. One was it used a rate of return of 9%.
Nine.
It also reduced the revenue target from what the company had originally proposed, and also took out the decoupling mechanism, all to provide more certainty. And let me just briefly, because we did hear from counsel that it was unlawful for the commission to do this. And I think for the question for the court, of course, is the commission's authority to have done this. Because if the court agrees, as I think it should, that the commission had the statutory authority to do this, then it's certainly appropriate for the court to defer to the commission expertise in terms of how this rider was restructured and how it was calculated. The statutory authority falls within the ESP statute 4928-143-B2D. That has three components. There must be a charge, clearly there's a charge. It must relate to one of the categories in the statute. This charge relates to the category of default service, and to the extent it includes in the rider the recovery of the deferred capacity costs, it also falls within the statute under the item of accounting deferrals. And then you have the commission making very specific factual findings that this rider was, in fact, would have the effect of stabilizing and providing certainty for the retail electric service. And now, you know, one advantage, I guess, of being almost at the end of the ESP period, of course, now at the end, the company has done all it's committed to do. As I mentioned, it is now going to be fully in the market. But another advantage of being at the end is we now know that this has been a successful plan. The company will be providing, as the commission so wanted, as the customer advocate so wanted, as of weeks, just a few weeks, 12 days, the company will be providing generation service at market-based pricing.
Is the company collecting money for an excess fund, for a default fund, a default account at the moment?
Right, there is, in the capacity case, the commission created the accounting deferral.
Yes.
In this case, the commission authorized the recovery of part of that deferral.
And that doesn't relate $1 to costs. That does not relate to the cost of providing the service. It's an extra account. Am I right?
No, it's all cost-based, Your Honor. It's an extra account in terms of how it's being recovered, but the capacity charges are cost-based. The rider is cost-based. It's all cost-based.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
By my scorecard, we have Mr. Maynard.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Good morning. The package approved by the commission in this case is part of a successful plan that has brought AEP's customers to a competitive marketplace, both for capacity and for energy. And in its orders, the commission struck a complex, comprehensive, and very carefully balanced plan that ensures reliability, stability for its customers, and at the same time, ensures revenue for the company for its continued operations and its ability to attract capital.
Counsel, you heard this morning your opposing counsel suggesting that the plan that was approved has established intra-class subsidies. Does it?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. What the plan did was to adopt a particular rate design for that particular customer class. All rate designs are going to have different effects on customers within that class. That's a very specific determination. It is a determination, as counsel himself noted, that the commission has great expertise in making, and this court has never second-guessed. That's a determination that should be left to the commission to make. The commission did find that other customers would suffer.
How many customer classes are there?
Oh, gracious. There are a number of different customer classes, and then there are subclasses within them, depending on the type of service that's offered to them.
Are there side agreements as well?
Well, there may be individual agreements for certain customers, yes. Those can exist.
Okay.
Yes.
And you don't know how many customer classes there are?
I don't, Your Honor, no.
What is the gross amount being generated?
And by the ESP plan or by the RSR mechanism, or
by all of it.
That's a question I'm not certain of, because the plan covers.
What's your best estimate?
Well, the pertinent figure in this case is the $508 million related to the RSR. There is the additional, you've heard, a $600 million figure that relates to the capacity costs, a portion of which were already recovered through the RSR. And I would say that that's the bulk of what's involved in this case. Of course, the capacity costs are actually being deferred for recovery at the end of the ESP case, beginning in a mere 12 days. The RSR is the issue that's really involved in this case, involving an amount, and that's the $508 million.
When you say it's being deferred, help me with that. What do
sure.
you mean?
There is another case that's pending before this court, the capacity cost case, in which the commission determined what it cost the company to provide capacity to its customers, whether those were retail customers or wholesale customers. That's the $188 that you hear about. As part of that case, the commission determined that CREST providers, the competitive retail suppliers, could continue to charge the market-based price for capacity, which was significantly less than the company's cost. That differential, the commission allowed the company to defer. That's part of the capacity cost case. In this case, what the commission did was to establish a recovery mechanism for those capacity costs. It did it by deferring those for recovery, amortizing those for a 3-year period following the ESP. It also said that the company was to allocate $1 of the RSR revenues that it was recovering to offset the deferrals as they accrued.
What was that capacity? What was the amount of the capacity?
That's the $600 million that you figure that you hear. And a portion of that, about $150 million of it, has already been recovered. The remainder of it is to be recovered beginning June 1st, amortized over the next 3 years.
So total, we're talking north of $1 billion in play in between the RSR and the capacity charge.
It's not strictly additive, but in general
terms. Which would explain part of why the CEO of this company has explained to Wall Street that, you know, we're doing great because we've had positive outcomes before regulatory agencies across the country. They're not just in Ohio, but across the country, and their stock's going from the 30s to mid-60s.
We believe the company is doing great
in the five-year period.
Yeah, we believe the company is doing great because we've enabled it to be competitive in the growing market. We've allowed the company to be able to move its generation off of its books. We've allowed the company to basically get rid of supply and capacity.
Let me take you directly to the Kroger argument. I mean, there are two arguments, as I understand it, here. One is that the commission doesn't even have any legal authority to do what they did. And secondly, from Kroger's standpoint, in doing what they did, you're really talking about capacity, and then when it came time to determine who pays, they measure the company's data on what the cost of this capacity is, and then when it came time to nick the customers for it, you switch to a usage measurement instead of who's responsible for creating the demand for this excess capacity.
Well, let's be clear, Your Honor. There is no legal prohibition against what the commission did in this instance. The commission is authorized to design rates, and this court has routinely deferred to the commission's expertise in doing that.
But
so there's no legal prohibition.
They are charged to be reasonable in their determinations.
And
we
indeed,
keep
the commission
that.
More than adequately supported that determination.
And Kroger's argument is, when you switch horses in the middle of the race, that's just not reasonable.
The RSR charge is not a capacity charge. If you look at how the charge is developed, it is a revenue target. It's designed, as Ms. Trafford indicated, to recover generation costs, but it's not strictly a capacity charge. In fact, the capacity costs in this case are what are deferred. That's the second part of the RSR. But the commission determined that if it were to design it the way that Kroger wanted the commission to design it, that other customers would suffer. Now, Mr. Urich takes issue with the characterization of those customers as being smaller customers. But the fact is that within a customer class, that entire class is responsible for a share of this revenue. And if Kroger's not paying it, then somebody else is.
Mr. Margard, is there a model for what the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio has done in this case?
Well, in the sense of Ms. Trafford indicated that the commission followed traditional rate-making process, there is.
Okay.
Let
me ask you a different question. Has it been done by the commission in a different field, in a different regulatory capacity, or has it been done in Indiana or Illinois or some other, or Florida or some other state?
I can't speak to other jurisdictions. I don't know that.
You don't know if this model exists anywhere else in the country?
I don't know that, Your Honor, but at least as respect to this kind of mechanism, this RSR mechanism, this is a unique approach that was adopted as part of this case, as part
never
of the ESP
before
statute.
Done in Ohio, to your knowledge?
Not strictly in this fashion, no, Your Honor.
And is the retail stability rider defined by statute anywhere?
It is not, Your Honor, but it is authorized, as Ms. Trafford indicated, by 4928.
That's part of the problem about what is it exactly? What is it designed to do? Does it cover capacity? Does it not? Is it a target or is it not? And is that something that we have to delve into and actually state what it is?
I don't believe that you need to, and I don't necessarily believe that you should. This is a critical component of an overall package, an overall plan that was designed to achieve the General Assembly's goal of bringing this company to a competitive marketplace.
Was this model proposed by AEP?
Excuse me,
was it who proposed this model?
Well, this model was proposed by AEP as part of their modified application. Now, it was subsequently modified by the Commission. There are a number of changes that were made to it, but the concept of an RSR mechanism was proposed by the company.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. Complicated case. The most pressing issue before the court really is who should repay the capacity discount that the Commission told AEP you must give the power marketers? The power marketers or the consumers? Our
Counsel, please introduce yourself.
Mike Kurtz for the Ohio Energy Group. Thank you, Your Honor. Our position is the discount was given to the power marketers and the power marketers should repay AEP.
And what would the power marketers do if they were responsible? How would they recoup?
Well,
wouldn't they just pass that on?
No, not necessarily. The power marketers were given a big discount on the capacity that they need to buy from AEP to serve consumers. If the power marketers pass through the entire discount to the consumers, then I would agree the power marketers aren't the bad guys under that scenario. However, if the power marketers simply use the discount to increase their profit margin, then you have a situation, which is far more likely, then you have a situation where the consumers are being required to repay the discount that went to increase the power marketers' profit margin.
Well, didn't at least theoretically, isn't it also possible that what's ending up happening here is the customers who just said, this is all a blizzard of mail and advertising and all that kind of stuff. Been happy. I'm not happy paying my electric bill, but the company's been reliable, so I'm staying put. So the people who never migrated anywhere are now, under this plan, going to pick up the tab for folks who got a break. It may be the power marketers, but it may be their retail customers that got the break.
That's correct, and that's the most egregious example of why the customers who didn't shop should have to repay the discount that went to the power marketers. At best, the discount got passed through to the shopping customers. Unlikely that all the discount got passed through. Much more
but
likely.
Some of it would have, certainly.
Probably, and that's the type of issue the Commission should review on remand, because there is this about $450 million big pot of money, the capacity deferral, that the Commission has to decide who's going to repay it. And on that, if you send this case back, they can look at the question of who should repay that $450 million, the power marketers who got the discount or consumers.
Well, power marketers may, they may be almost illusory. Are they big boys, or are they people who got in the business in a hurry and made a quick buck and are out the door?
No, they're big boys. They're affiliates of AEP, affiliates of First Energy, very, very large. Now, you get into sticky questions on remand of jurisdiction over the Commission to order the power marketers to repay. Nevertheless, it should go back to the Commission to grapple with those questions. Because what is unreasonable—
Is there a clear legal path for that? I mean, we can't say a sticky issue.
Yes.
If we send it back and say, collect it from the power marketers, and there's no legal ability to do that. That's illusory as well, isn't it?
Well, the commission could condition future service by the power marketers. If you want to continue doing business in Ohio, which needs commission approval, you must repay the money the discount that you received. That the remand would be contentious, it would be difficult, but it's better than simply saying, consumers, you have to repay the discount that somebody else got that provided you no benefit.
But hasn't the commission already considered that argument? And hasn't they considered whether the consumers will be paid or whether the power marketers will do it and how the $600 million is to be collected? I think if I understood Mr. Margard, he said it's going to be commencing over a three-year period, they're going to collect the $450 million on the which is left on the $600.
That's correct. The commission has.
And so they've already considered all of this.
That's
and
what
you want us to send it back and say, consider it again.
Yes, and
but why would we do that if they've already done it?
Because consumers are not required to repay the discount that the power marketers received. It was illegal. It's not legal.
So you think it's an abuse of discretion on the part of the commission to authorize AEP to collect the $450 million going forward from consumers, or only those in the class who didn't shop? Group are you speaking of?
Well, it's not an abuse of discretion. It's unlawful because there's no provision under the ESP statute to. This is a case of first impression, like you asked. Nowhere before has the commission ordered consumers to repay a discount that the power marketers received. Now, it's.
Do you take issue with the discount that was originally afforded the power marketers?
If the commission want, the power marketers should have paid the entire amount that the commission said that AEP was entitled to. AEP is not the bad guy in this part of the drama. It's really between consumers and power marketers, and the power marketers should have paid the full freight from the start.
So yes. They should not have gotten a discount. That's what you're telling us.
Yes, and if they did get a discount, they should repay the discount.
Well, they did get the discount. That's a fact, correct?
Yes.
And obviously we're here to determine what you do with that discount going forward.
Yes. Our position is, as is everyone on this side of the table, that the power marketers should repay the discount that they received.
Thank you. Who's left? Mr. Durr.
Let me suggest, Your Honor, one more wrinkle to this, and that is I sincerely and deeply disagree with Mr. Kurtz's suggestion just now that the commission could authorize the $188 price for capacity in the first place. As you'll find in our brief, we went to extraordinary lengths, both in this case and in the capacity case, to challenge the commission's assertion of authority to set a wholesale capacity price. Where does that jurisdiction come from? Where does that authority come from? The statutes in Ohio are very specific. The commission has the authority to authorize services provided to end users, to consumers. 490506 applies only to retail services because it draws from the definition in 490502 and 03. That definition is continued over into section 4928. 01A, 6, and 7.
Counsel, Ms. Trafford cited 4928-143, B2-3. What about that?
B2-D allows for the provision of a rider which has the effect of stabilizing the provision of electric retail service. You've previously addressed that situation in the first AEP remand case. In that case, you said basically that the commission has the authority to authorize a stability rider. Does this rider stabilize anything? No. It fixes the price of generation services, non-energy generation services, by increasing the price of all services. How is that a stabilization of price? It is not. It is complete malarkey, for lack of a better term. When you look at the stabilization plan in total, the commission was so concerned about increased prices that it required a rate-by-rate review as to whether or not a revenue or a rate cap would be violated. How is that stabilizing prices? And where's the commission's authority to stabilize a price? The statute says, specifically, it's to stabilize the provision of electric retail services. The only place where the commission has authority to stabilize a price is under Section 144, 4928-144. And there the language is specific. We should give credit to the legislature that it knew the difference between stabilizing retail electric service and stabilizing prices. They distinguished between the two.
The $188 was how far north of what was the norm at the time?
The authorized, FERC-authorized price for capacity service ranged from $20 to $120 per megawatt day. Commission, asserting authority over a wholesale service that it did not have, claimed that the price on a cost-based formula, which it invented, there is no statutory provision for a pricing a wholesale service. The price that it invented was $188. And that, according to AEP, is $170 less per megawatt day than what it claimed the price was.
So
the price which was embedded in its rate plan.
So they were up over 300.
Yes, they estimated it, their calculation estimated it at $355 per megawatt day. And in fact, that's the price that was frozen in the generation rate, according to evidence presented by AEP.
So what did the industrial energy users want us to do with this case?
In this case, you have the opportunity, first of all, to hold that the assumption that the commission can set the capacity, wholesale capacity price, is beyond their legal authority. Second, that the deferral is not authorized under Section 144, 4928-144.
The deferral
because
of
the price was
the
set.
The deferral of the capacity charge?
The deferral of the capacity charge, yes, Your Honor. Cannot be deferred because that price was not a term or condition set as part of an ESP. Remember, the 188 price was set in a separate proceeding where the commission claimed it was acting under the authorization of 4905-0456 and 4905-26, not as part of an ESP. The commission says it's deferring the price, says it's allowing the phase-in of that price, and then turns around and ignores the express provision, the express limitations in 144.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Trafford.
Just briefly address several of the points we've heard since my last visit for the court. The capacity case and the validity of establishing the capacity charge, that's in the different case. That's in the capacity case that's pending before the court, and the court will have an opportunity to address all those issues in that case. Let me address the deferred capacity and the recovery of that.
Well, we'll have a chance to address it, but won't it be collected as of July 1?
A certain
The $450 million has been deferred, and so it's already going to be collected.
Some of it
has. So at some point next year, we'll hear the capacity case, but those charges will already have been collected.
Part of it has already been collected. It was collected during the three-year ESP period.
Yes.
Because of the amount recovered under the rider, $1 went to the deferral, to the capacity deferrals. So part of that has already been
recovered. My understanding is of the $600 million authorized, $150 million has been collected and is being held. And $450 is going to be collected over the next 3 years.
That's correct. And how that ties in with the ESP,
by the time we get to the capacity case, if we don't agree with it, the money will already have been collected. Or a portion of it will.
A portion of it. Of course, the court in the capacity case could decide, you know, maybe it should have been higher, maybe it should have been lower. Yes,
yes.
So there could be adjustments. And there will be adjustments in the deferral because it's subject to audit and commission review all the way through.
But not subject to refund.
No, it would not be subject to refund.
Counsel, I think I heard this morning that if we were to find the order to be illegal, that would be revenue neutral. What does that mean?
Revenue, that was with respect to the rate design, Your Honor. Rate design would be revenue neutral to the company. There is X amount being recovered. Kroger's position was some customers pay too much, some customers pay too little. If you adjust that, it doesn't affect how much the company recovers. It just affects who is paying for that. That's a different issue. Let me briefly address the issue of why it's paid by the customers, why the deferral is fairly paid by the customers. One thing that's important to keep in mind, during this entire period, AEP Ohio, as a result of its obligations under both federal and state law, was required to provide the capacity to all customers, whether they shopped, whether they didn't shop. This idea that you have two sets of customers, you have customers and they're not penned into separate pastures. With few exceptions, they roam freely. So all customers benefited from the capacity AEP Ohio was required to provide throughout this period. So in that sense, all customers should bear the cost. In addition, it was important for the deferral, the authority to have the recovery in the ESP does come under B2D. There's a very specific category for terms and conditions and charges that relates to deferrals that have the effect of stabilizing and providing certainty. Once the commission elected to provide for the recovery of the deferred cost in the ESP, then it had the authority under the next statute, 4928.144, to actually phase this in over time. And what's critical there, in that statute, the General Assembly says when you phase it in over time, it is to be non-bypassable. All customers should pay. So there is basic fairness in it. There is authority under the law for this. The statutes work together.
Well, Ms. Trafford, to use your all customers roaming freely in the big pasture, didn't, at least theoretically, the customers who shopped and went through the marketers, I mean, that's how you shop, right? Is you take it from the marketers, and the marketers got the discount that's now sought to be recovered. So somehow those customers got the better part of the pasture because they benefited from the discount, and the non-shopping customers are getting gigged for part of the recovery.
I don't think that's a fair way to describe it, in that all customers during this period had the ability to shop. Remember, part of the commission's—
So you were a fool if you didn't.
No, part of the commission's goal was to give effect to what the statutory goal has been all along, to encourage competitive markets. To do that, you have to have a stable, competitive suppliers. And so part of the reason for the commission's decision was to encourage the growth of the competitive market. And it worked. We had substantial increase in shopping during this period. Very, very significant increase. That part of the goal was met. It was also important, in order to be able to provide that option of having shopping, to make sure you had stable default service as an alternative also for all customers. AP has its generation plants. During this period of time, those plants were committed to providing capacity for all customers across the board. And that's why all customers across the board should bear the cost of that once the commission made the decision to give the set the price for the competitive providers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we're done. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.